Hi, I'm David Crow. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. You can email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com, like us, or join the discussion at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth, or follow us on Twitter at infectiousmyth. We're on iTunes and other podcast programs. And remember that I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. If you send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show, and including your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift. If you would like to sponsor the show as an individual or advertise on this show, please contact me. We appreciate all our listeners, but if you want the show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information that you're gleaning, for the support that you get for some of your own non-mainstream ideas, and for the challenges that I give to others of your ideas. And remember that if you sponsor this show, you're also helping to provide it to people who are not able to do so or haven't yet listened to enough to be able to make the decision to support it. Also, I'd like you to consider supporting PRN.FM, the radio station that supports the show by putting it on the air, providing us the airtime at 2 p.m. Eastern Time every week, and also providing the website with the podcast where people can download it at any time. And people certainly are downloading the episodes. I can't believe that we've already made it past 70 episodes, and we will be continuing for as long as possible. And your support really helps. Your support not only in terms of money, but also in terms of feedback to the show, in suggesting new guests. Any contact from you is motivating to let us know that there's a real audience out there, that people appreciate this information, and maybe in some cases it's changing your lives or changing your attitudes. Anyway, on to today's guest. I'd like to welcome to my show today Edmund McNack. His horrible journey with AIDS drugs started when he was a sheriff's deputy in Kansas City, and he was bitten by a prisoner that he was helping transport. Even though HIV tests on him and the prisoner came back negative within 24 hours, he was encouraged to continue AIDS drugs for 12 weeks. He made it for 10, despite excruciating side effects. The antiretroviral AIDS drugs caused a condition called sarcoidosis, non-cancerous tumors throughout the body. The solution to this was high-dose prednisone, a steroid, which caused such severe bone loss that Edmund needed both hips replaced. Compounding the tragedy, at every turn he was denied compensation. Although sarcoidosis after AIDS drugs is well known, it had never before been reported in HIV-negative people because, no surprise, HIV-negative people usually don't take AIDS drugs. Therefore, the experts said, there was no proof that the drugs could cause a sarcoidosis in HIV-negative people like Edmund. Edmund exhausted all avenues of appeal and now just wants to get his story out to help others. He first did this on my podcast, How Positive Are You?, back in 2010, but this is an important story, so I'm coming back to talk to Edmund McNack again. Welcome to the show, Edmund.
Thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate all you've done to help me get my story out there.
Yeah, well, it is important, you were given medication to supposedly prevent HIV transmission, and that's got the cute name of PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis. And what's used for PEP today is not that much different than was used in the 1990s. It still usually contains AZT or very closely related drug. So do you remember your first, after you started the drugs, how long was it before you started to experience side effects?
You know, for me, David, like I said, I would have to be honest with you and say I noticed immediately, probably within the first 48 to 72 hours,
mm-hmm.
You know, for me, just it's so vivid in my mind, just going from being the healthy person that I was to taking the medication, and within you know, 2-3 days, the vomiting that just would not stop. So I would say immediately, you know, to me that's pretty much immediately for me.
Right. Well,
based on my, you know, my lifestyle, what, you know, and the job capacity that I was working in. So it was a real sudden change.
Right. Right. Well, one expects, you know, a sheriff's deputy, kind of like a policeman of some kind, to be a pretty strong guy. And that's who you were back then. Right.
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, and like I said, my story then, it's been the same. You know, I was very fit. You know, I did a lot of weightlifting,
mm-hmm.
bodybuilding, just totally physically fit person.
And how much could you lift back then?
Oh, you know, I can remember times bragging with some of the other police officers, you know, that were worked with another department, you know, bench pressing, you know, anywhere between 250 to, you know, 300 pounds, no problem.
Wow, wow, I can do, I can do 160.
So. Oh, that's great. That's not bad. Not bad at all. You know?
And that's at the limit of my abilities. I guess anyway, but that's a lot, 250. That's huge. And when, you know, what did you do when you started to get sick? Did you go talk to a doctor? Did you talk to somebody about what was happening and why you were getting sick?
You know, I was given the medication there, you know, at Truman Medical Center in Kansas City, Missouri. And like I said, once I started experiencing the vomiting, you know, and these severe cramps that just totally would not stop, I went and spoke with the emergency room physician that actually gave me the medication in the beginning.
Right.
And, of course, they referred me to the clinic, to one of the clinics there at the hospital, and I began seeing them there in the clinic with you know, no explanation as to why, you know, this is all of a sudden happening, other than it'll clear up. It'll clear up. Sometimes these medications can cause that, but it'll clear up. Don't worry about it.
I've always thought that the reason it clears up is because I don't know if this happened with you, but doctors usually emphasize that if you're taking AIDS drugs, you absolutely have to be 100% compliant. I mean, did they tell you that? You can't miss a dose?
Oh, you know, I really don't recall, David, but being that, you know, being that I was somewhat afraid.
Right.
Well, not somewhat afraid. Being that I was afraid at the time of possibly contracting, you know, the HIV virus.
Right.
You know, I was totally compliant. You know, just knowing that, you know, you have the healthcare professional, you know, the physician is telling you this is what you need to do and this is what we're going to stick to. I was 100% compliant.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, if I believed that HIV was possibly going to be, you know, was in that woman who bit you, and if I believed I could get a fatal disease, then I would think, well, geez, a few weeks of misery are a whole lot better than, you know, an early death.
Sure, most definitely.
Yeah. So they didn't deny that they were related to the drugs you were taking. They just said that the side effects would go away.
Yeah, it was pretty much that. It'll go away, you know, in time. We'll just stick to the regimen. We'll stick to the plan. But, you know, after a while, I'd say within that first week, it really went from, you know, the severe vomiting to the diarrhea, you know, the twitching, you know, my eyes, you know, muscle twitching. Other things began to happen. And, it, you know, within that first week, week and a half, I mean, I really started experiencing other things as well. And, became pretty scary.
Right. What I was going to say earlier is I think that in a lot of cases, people stop taking the drugs or they skip doses, and they're afraid to tell their doctors that they've done this. And so then the doctor sees the side effects going away. But I think you had more self-discipline and a higher pain threshold than most people, so you kept going for 10 weeks is what you told me.
Yes, correct.
And, I mean, how were you by the end of the 10 weeks?
Well, it got to a point, David, where I was going to the doctor every week, 2 and 3 times a week.
Right.
I'm complaining about this, whether it was the vomiting, the diarrhea, you know, the muscle twitching, the severe cramps. I began complaining every week. There was something new,
right?
You know, to just the weakness, and every week there was something new, and it seems like the more I spoke with the physicians, and I'm complaining about, you know, I'm very concerned about certain things that are happening. It was just always, we'll stick to the plan. You need to stick to the course of medical. The course of medications, you know, you got 12 weeks. You should be able to handle the 12 weeks, and that's just what we'll do. And being that I was so afraid at the time of, you know, possibly contracting something from this individual, you know, maybe I, you know, probably should have stopped earlier, but that fear of possibly, you know, catching something or contracting something from this individual, you know, I remained totally compliant throughout, you know, the 8 to 10 weeks that I took the medication.
Right. And why did you stop before the 12 weeks? You told me before it was 8 to 10 weeks, but you made it most of the way, but you didn't finish. So did it just get so bad you couldn't handle it anymore?
Exactly, David. I began questioning whether or not these doctors knew what they were talking about.
Right.
When it got to a point for me, you know, I never forget, David, at the time, you know, telling my better half at the time, I said, I never forget, we were actually in our car, we were going somewhere, we were going out to dinner, and I never forget this, David, I told her, I said, you know, take me to the emergency room, you know. I said, I love you, but, you know, I think I'm going to die.
Really?
You know, it's funny, David. I can remember that so well, even though I don't remember a lot of, you know, the hospital stay, but
right.
I never forget that. I had this feeling, David, you know, I was like, this is it. I am literally wasting away.
Right. And were you losing a lot of weight over this period of time?
You know, I went from 265, you know, I lost 42 pounds.
Wow.
In just a matter of just like that.
Right, over this
I'm
this
looking in the period. Mirror at myself, and I, you know, it's almost like, you know, I'm looking at a skeleton, you know. I know the person that I was when I graduated from the police, from the Sheriff's Academy, and, you know, looking at myself and looking at some of the photos, wow, I lost, like I said, just over 40 pounds.
Amazing. So how long, so after you'd finished this, were you able to go back to work, or, like, what did you do at this point? Like, you were so weak.
The sheriff's department had actually assigned a nurse case manager to follow me along.
Right.
When I told them I was not going back to see the doctors that, you know, were part of the work comp doctors, you know, I basically told them I don't think they know what they're talking about. You know, I think I'm going to die, you know, from taking this stuff here. They assigned a nurse case manager to me, and I end up going to a different hospital and seeing a different group of physicians who immediately, the very first day I saw them, admitted me to the hospital.
And how long did you stay in the hospital?
I believe it was September the 10th of 2000 to October the 6th of 2000.
So about a month.
Yes.
And then how were you after you'd been in the hospital? So now you're off the AIDS drugs, trying to recover. But how was your health once you got out of the hospital?
You know, during the time, David, you know, I was in the hospital. Yeah, I don't know. You know, honestly, I don't remember the hospital stay and the things that were happening. But, you know, to be told the things that had happened to me while I was in the hospital from the nurse case manager, from the physicians, from my better half, from my family.
Right.
You know, I never forget them being told that I would not live to see the next morning. And the nurse case manager, Miss Matthews, she told me, she said, I never forget receiving that call at 2 o'clock in the morning and them telling me, you're not going to make it.
Really? You were in that bad shape?
You know, yeah, that bad. You know, I don't remember it. That's just how ill I was. I don't recall any of it, but it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. When I'm looking at the medical records and, you know, being told things from my family and the physicians, you know, that were working with me, they were pretty sure I wouldn't survive.
But I guess you had a lot of health reserves from having been pretty young and healthy and strong, so I guess that it got you through it. But when you got out of the hospital, how were you? Were you in any kind of shape to go back to work? Or what was your health?
No, well, that I recall, David, it was still a lot of weakness.
Right.
I was taking, at the time, I ended up developing the sarcoidosis. And
how long was it before you developed sarcoidosis?
You know, reading the medical records, you know, I'm seeing where it comes in, where the sarcoid comes in. But when I was admitted to the hospital, they did biopsies, medial spinal lymph nodes. They did exploratory surgery, removed granulomas from my liver, my spleen, pancreas. Pretty much all of my internal organs were affected.
Wow.
With the sarcoidosis. You know, usually you'll hear people say, or most of the literature will talk about lung damage.
Right.
Well, I did have some lung damage, but it had also affected all of my internal organs.
Right, and sarcoidosis is the development of tumors which are not considered carcinogenic. Like they don't keep growing, but they do cause health problems, and they need to be removed if possible. I mean, that's pretty hardcore surgery to be having tumors removed from organs in your body, and it also kind of says that those organs are probably not working 100% if they've been growing tumors off the side.
Right, and you know, from some of the infectious disease specialists that were working with me at the time, now this is after the fact where I'm able to talk with them, and they're telling me the different things that were going on when they were trying to actually diagnose what the problem was. You know, I was put on amphotericin A, amphotericin B, you know, where they're thinking maybe a fungal infection, to the point where they just did not know what was going on.
Right, and when doctors don't know what to do, they just throw more and more drugs at you, which can
Oh, yeah.
compound the problem that you had initially. But eventually they decided they needed to put you on prednisone.
Yes. Dr. Orlando spoke with my family, and of course, you know, I wasn't aware of this, David, until, you know, I got better and my family told me about the situation, and he told me about the situation. He said there was a point where, after meeting with all of the infectious disease specialists and another group of internists, you know, he told my family, this is what I think it is. But if we're wrong and we give him the prednisone, it could kill him.
Wow.
But this is what I think it is. This is what Dr. Orlando said. I think this is what it is. But if we're wrong, it could possibly kill him by giving him the prednisone.
All right. And what did he say was the problem? Like, why did he say prednisone was necessary?
He thought that it was, in fact, sarcoid and not a fungal infection, as a lot of the infectious disease specialists thought. And I never forget my family telling me that one of the physicians said, well, I think he's just an undiagnosed case of HIV.
Right. Even though you were HIV negative, you're experiencing symptoms that might have been AIDS.
Yes.
Because AIDS drugs can cause a lot of symptoms of AIDS. So it
yes.
becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I think this doctor maybe had it right, that there was a non-infectious cause for your sarcoids, the drugs you've been taking. And the fungal, antifungal drugs probably only made things worse. I mean, whether they impacted the sarcoids is a good question. But prednisone has a lot of side effects as well. Like it has a lot of mental effects, like nervousness, depression, aggression, agitation. I mean, did you experience those things once they put you on prednisone?
Funny to hear you say that, David. I experienced 100% everything that you were saying.
Okay.
But most strange to me was I realized that I was going through those changes. Whereas my family is telling me, you know, they're walking on eggshells and, you know, my mood is going from A to Z, you know, these mood swings and
right.
the changes, you know, I never really recognized that. But, you know, my children and my family are telling me, yeah, it's like walking on eggshells around you.
And how long did they have you on prednisone?
I'm still on prednisone to this very day.
Really? Really?
Yes.
And that's to try to keep these sarcoids under control.
Correct.
Right. And then after you'd been on prednisone for some time, that caused your hips to give out, right?
Right. It did cause the avascular necrosis of my hips. Like you said, in 2000, May of 2000, I had my right hip replaced. In September of the same year, I had my left hip replaced. So, yeah, I'm 15 years out. Pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you still have a really positive attitude. I don't know how you maintain that after everything that you've been through, but it's always a pleasure to talk to you because you have a positive outlook. And what you've said to me several times is that you're not talking to me for yourself. You're just trying to talk to me to get the message out to other people that they need to think about these AIDS drugs, before they start taking them.
Yeah, most definitely, David. You know, I was truly, I was afraid. I really, talking to these physicians, you know, just as I said, you know, being a deputy sheriff, if you were to ask me something that was related to the law, I would give you the very best knowledge that I had that would relate to the law.
Mm-hmm.
So just as these physicians, you know, they're giving me their, I believe, their very best, you know, opinion in regards to medicine. So I'm trusting in them 100% at the time.
Right.
So, you know, what do you do? And, you know, you're afraid of contracting, you know, a disease that could kill you.
Right. But after a certain point, you are afraid that the drugs are going to kill you.
And most definitely. Most definitely. Today, David, when I look back on it, or people, you know, contact me, we talk about it. It got to a point where I'm looking at these guys and I'm saying, you don't know what you're talking about. And being that they were the medical professionals still at that time, it wasn't a disrespect for them in their position. It was, I felt I was a test.
There were not that many. I don't think there were ever a lot of people who were given the PEP, the post-exposure prophylaxis. I mean, maybe a few hundred people. So probably in your part of the country, in Kansas City, you might have been the first person to be given this. So the doctors probably had no experience or very little experience with other people. And they don't know, you know, for other people, they may quit after the 48 to 72 hours. They start vomiting and getting diarrhea and stuff. A lot of people might quit. But I can almost guarantee that when they go back to the doctor and the doctor says, you know, are you taking 100% of the doses? They'll say yes. And then the doctor gets the impression that these side effects go away. And so you were, you know, with hip replacements, weight loss, weakness, all of this kind of stuff, you were unable to work. You never worked again for the sheriff's department after you went on these drugs. Is that correct?
Right, and never worked again.
Right. And then when you tried to get compensation, you were denied the compensation after quite a long battle over that.
Oh, yeah, I was. I was also denied the compensation for it. Based on, of course, you know, you guys did print the decisions from the work and comp judges.
Right.
Like I said, even to this very day, you know, I've people will still contact me and they'll ask me, have you ever heard of anybody else that has gone through what you went through? Like, we're still waiting to find somebody. We're still waiting to hear about it. You know, you just, sometimes you have to be the first, you know?
Right.
And I believe maybe, like you said, maybe in this area, I was just the first.
Well, you might,
and people are really afraid to come forward and say anything.
Right, because most of the people who take post-exposure prophylaxis are probably medical people. Like it will be a nurse who's you know, putting a needle into a patient and ends up, you know, the patient moves or something and ends up sticking herself, or a doctor. And of course, those people are within the medical system, and so they're probably very reluctant to say anything publicly, because first of all, they feel, you know, if I can't take these drugs, then they might feel bad, like I'm letting the system down, they may also feel that, gee, I'm just one person, so I shouldn't speak about my experience because, you know, the doctors know that this is unusual, and I shouldn't turn people off from doing the right thing. You're in a somewhat different, you know, you're obviously in a different class. You weren't working in the medical system. And I also think that you, because you were so strong and disciplined, that you were able to continue longer than most people.
And I thought about it, David, and I said to myself, I'm truly blessed to still be here. But the thought that it took me the 8 to 10 weeks to say enough is enough. A lot of people say, well, that's just crazy. You know, just based on the issues that you were having, wouldn't something say stop? But I don't think they're getting it, David. When I say, or you're being told information that if you were to contract the HIV virus, it's going to kill you. And based on the information that was out at the time, the fear level was a 10.
Right. I mean, this was in the late 90s. So AIDS was relatively young in those days, and the fear was still much higher than it is today. I think today most people have kind of forgotten about AIDS. It's just
Oh,
something that happens to other people. But back then, there was still a fear it was going to get into the general population, and it was going to affect everybody.
Speaking about even the physician there that told my family and told the nurse case manager and those that were working with me at the time that I was just, they truly believed I was just an undiagnosed case of HIV. And I'm saying to myself, well, if you take a 265-pound guy, totally healthy, never had health problems, began to take the heart medication, and he goes from 265 pounds, he loses 42 pounds in less than 2 months, basically withering away, to the point of death. I became gravely ill, and still, no one wanted to say that the medication caused that.
Right. It's quite amazing how doctors will defend medication to irrational points of view. I mean, we see this also in the vaccine discussions where, there's not a balanced discussion like, yes, sometimes vaccines can cause damage and sometimes they're not as effective as we'd like. It's become black and white. Like they're either perfect or there's people on the other side saying they're dangerous and useless. And there's nobody in the middle saying, well, why don't we take each one individually and think about it? And maybe in some cases, the risk of side effects is too great. And, maybe the risk of AIDS, even if you believe the whole HIV thing, maybe the risk is it's not beneficial to take these potent drugs to prevent a very what's believed to be a very small risk. I mean, the risk of transmission from saliva is believed to be essentially zero. So if somebody gets bitten like you did, you kind of ask yourself, well, if saliva can't transmit HIV, like why would they give post-exposure prophylaxis to somebody who was just bitten? It's not like you were stabbed with a needle that had HIV positive blood on it.
Right. David, I want to say this too. When I was going to the clinics at this hospital, David, it was more and more and more of the heart medication. I'll never forget saying, explaining to them, look, here's what's happening, here's what's going on with me. And each week, two or three times a week when I'm seeing them, something new is taking place. Do you realize they gave me more of the hot medication? Take this, stay on it, stay here, it's gonna get better, it's gonna get better. I just look back on it and, and I start to think about some of the things that people say, maybe I was really losing it at that time that I didn't just stop. Why it took me, the 8, 10 weeks to say enough's enough, I really couldn't tell you. Just that fear factor, but at the same time, I never forget them giving me more and more and more.
Well, you'd think it would be irresponsible. I mean, if it doesn't matter what your condition is, if a doctor's giving you medications and you're starting to come back and you're complaining about severe side effects, you would think the doctor would have second thoughts and say, okay, maybe this works for most people, but it's not working for this guy, and we should see if there's an alternative. But it doesn't sound like in your case anybody was ever thinking about alternatives, because the only alternative might have been not to take the drugs at all, and that's was maybe unthinkable for them.
And and that's what I'm saying. I'm not, I'm really not, David. I'm not against, the medical community. I'm not, I know it serves a great purpose, and there's a lot of good things that, happen, in medicine. I just, in my case, I just wanted to find somebody else that was HIV negative, that had gone through the same thing that I've gone through. And David, I've been contacted by many healthcare professionals and even people that didn't want to identify themselves, who I knew based on the conversations that I was having with them, were either physicians,
right,
or, you know, nurses, medical professionals, that never wanted to just say, well, that happened to me as well. You know, they would just say, well, I'd experienced something like that. I experienced this. I'm like, well, you know, I'd be very interested in, you know, finding out who you are. And nobody, I don't know what the big secret is, David. Maybe you could tell me. But nobody wanted to say ever who they were.
Well, that's really quite interesting. And there's a huge degree of conformity in the medical system. So if somebody is talking to you, that may mean they're having second thoughts about how safe and effective this PEP medication is. And, you know, they don't want to go out on a limb because they probably know they're going to lose their job if they lose faith in the system, if they decide they don't want to give these drugs. I mean, maybe their plan is that if they lose faith in these drugs, they're going to they're going to try to avoid using them, or they're going to drop some hints to the person that, you know, if there's a lot of side effects, just kind of, you know, stop and don't tell anybody. Maybe they don't want to stick their neck out, which says...
Go ahead.
Yeah, it just doesn't say anything good about the system. Go ahead.
And I do believe that, you know, truly, I do believe that. I just, it's almost like being interviewed by a physician or some group out there that's really trying to find out more information about the drugs as well, to the point where, well, I'll just say, those groups that did contact me, that made themselves clear to me who they were,
mm-hmm,
and what have you, they, just as you said, nobody still wants to just come out and say. And I, you know, to this very day, David, I just don't understand that. You know, you just, what is it, why you just won't come out and say?
Well, I mean, there's a big history of conformity in medicine. I mean, one example was what they called radical mastectomy. I mean, in the early in the 20th century, some powerful doctor said, if a woman has breast cancer, you have to remove the whole breast. There's no intermediate. There's no removing the tumor and leaving the rest of the breast. You got to remove the whole thing. And so for decades, doctors did this. And when they actually looked into it, they realized that the success rate in terms of like the percentage of women who live versus dying was no better with radical mastectomy. Although, you know, it would make sense if you take more off, then you get a better chance of taking all the cancer. But there was no evidence for this. But it was imposed on the system, and it would have been malpractice, say, in the 1950s, to just remove the tumor. And this went on for decades. It's not unusual. And doctors who probably had concerns about this were very reluctant to say anything because they knew that all the others felt, you know, supported the establishment, and so they would potentially lose their job, get all kinds of grief for what things are.
It's... Yeah, and just what you're saying, you know, yeah, I do understand that. And at the time with my attorney, you can't even imagine how many infectious disease specialists that we spoke with, that not a one. I can't even tell you, David, how many that we contacted. Not a single one would ever say that these medications could have caused this. Not a one.
Really? So you never had an expert witness who was willing to stand up and say in court or this sort of quasi-legal tribunal that these drugs could have caused these symptoms, which would, of course, being a slam dunk to award you compensation.
you know, and who we did have was Dr. Friedlander, as you see from the information that you have and that we put out, was really the only one that was willing to say, I believe it did, but once he stated it's a gray area, you know, and you seem to be the only one, you know, the only HIV negative person that have ever experienced these things.
Right.
You know, it's a gray area. Then everything changed. You know, nobody wants to say definitively that, yes, this caused this.
Right. I mean, you'd think they would want to give you the benefit of the doubt. But in actual fact, they gave the drugs the benefit of the doubt. If you
definitely. And I don't understand that to this very day. But, you know, like I said, David, you know, you guys don't know how many people we contacted. I'm talking as far as the West Coast, the East Coast, the UK. Not one infectious disease doctor out of all that we spoke with would ever say anything. And then to have Dr. Friedlander say, looking at you based on the situation, 100%, this is what caused it. But yeah, it's a gray area. You know, and the fact that we can't find another case like yours says that you're probably first. And usually those that are first don't have a good outcome.
In terms
of, you're here, you know, and you made it through.
Right. I mean, that's to me, that's just incredible. Like, if he had just said the truth, like, your symptoms are compatible with the side effects of these drugs, and we've seen this in other people, and what does HIV have to do with it? Like, there's no reason he had to even mention HIV, because your symptoms were not believed to be due to HIV, because you didn't have HIV. And so if he'd seen the same symptoms following this drug in HIV-positive people, then, you know, it should be the same with you.
And just hearing people say, after the fact, saying, well, you know, just if there would have been something that would have said you may have developed HIV after the fact, maybe you would have had a different outcome. You know, to even hear some of the law professionals say, if somewhere in there you could have found a doctor to say you could possibly have converted HIV positive, you know, later down the line, you very well may have won your case.
Well, I think
I'll take neither one. Just for my own health. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I think that's quite true. If you had actually converted to HIV after taking PEP, then you would have had a slam dunk. You would have been compensated. Plus, if you're HIV positive, there's all kinds of government programs. Your drugs would have been free. You know, there's subsidized for housing, all kinds of stuff. But because you remained negative and your side effects were obviously due to the drugs, then they didn't compensate you. And I think sometimes, like, in, you know, the amount of money that they would have had to pay you is really, in the grand scheme of things, not that significant. But I think the fear is that if one person gets compensation for a drug-induced disorder, then there might be 100 people who will come up, or 1,000 people, or 10,000 people, and then it starts to get expensive.
Right, and even just with what you said, my attorney at the time, you know, he said, would have been a landmark case, and there would have been some pretty significant changes that would have taken place, and I believe a lot more people would have come forward, just as you said.
Yeah, well, I wish I had been around at the time, and I mean, I'm not sure I could have helped you find a doctor who would have testified. Maybe somebody like Dr. Peter Duisberg or somebody like that could have testified. But often they demand AIDS experts, you know, or experts in these particular drugs, and that those people tend to believe in the drugs that they prescribe.
And like you said, we spoke with many from the East Coast to the West Coast. nobody wanted to say.
Yes.
I'm just bringing it all back to me, you know, talking with you now, and, you know, as it all comes back to me, it's just the thought that, you know, I'm talking, I don't mean 10 or 15 doctors. I don't mean 20 or 30. I'm talking, I know we spoke with at least 100. I, myself, at least 100, maybe 150 doctors. Not a one.
Right. And Friedlander, you know, basically said that these drugs can cause these conditions, but we've never seen it before in an HIV-negative person, so it's a gray area. And by
exactly.
doing that, he basically killed your case, killed your compensation.
Well, you know, I really appreciate, you know, the fact that Dr. Friedlander was, you know, willing to say, you know, just who couldn't read it and say, you know, well, the guy was perfectly healthy. He was fine. You know, he took these medications and he nearly died.
Well, it seems to me that there are some things in life where somebody who's not being educated can see the truth really easily, and it takes a whole deal of education for you to deny the truth. Sometimes that seems to be the case, that you need to get a PhD before you can look at what's obvious and say, no, that's not true. And I guess
and
there's...
Go ahead.
I guess there's cases where that is true, you know, that somebody with a PhD can explain why what you think you're looking at is not true. But in many cases, I think, like in your case, you're taking a powerful drug. It has acknowledged very toxic side effects. You experienced side effects, many of which are documented. You had no other health risks. You had been previously healthy. Therefore, you'd think it would be obvious that your health problems were caused by the AIDS drugs followed by the antifungals and the prednisone.
You know, and then too, David, you have, I look at the, see, I don't want to sound like somebody that's, you know, against, you know, the courts or against the medical, you know, professionals there. I have absolutely no problem with the law, the work comp law, with medicine, period. I have absolutely no problem with that. What I'm trying to say is when it comes to just my particular case, there could, you know, if you take just that individual, that judge, for example, mm-hmm. that judge, just maybe it's just me, David. It's just not that difficult to read and say, this guy was perfectly healthy. He took this medication, and we know in HIV positive people, these things happen when they take the medication.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking the judge, the work comp judge, and just say, I mean, just read it. How difficult could that be? It's just not that difficult. And I want to stay in a position where, you know, she did her job. I'm okay with it. I thank God that I'm here. You know, I'm able. I have children that have graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, graduating from college. You know, I thank God. You know, have I had financial difficulties and struggles? Yes, I have. But I thank God every day that, you know, He spared my life. I'm here. I've seen so much. And I'm able, hopefully, to help people out there that have gone through maybe, you know, what I've gone through. And maybe they will, you know, one day come forward so that we can help the next person.
Right, you know. And can people email you or phone you if they'd like to talk to you?
I have absolutely no problem with that. I've been contacted by a gentleman that had, I believe he contacted you, Mr. Rands. Are you familiar?
Rands. I'm not... His name's not ringing a bell, but I get contacted by a lot of people also. So.
Okay. Yeah, who wanted to speak with me, and to this very day, we still speak.
Okay.
We talk on a pretty regular regular basis, 2 or 3 times a month, you know.
Okay.
And, yeah, I have absolutely no problem with that. I just want to, I don't want people to think, David, that I'm against the system or anything like that, because I'm not, you know. This is just what happened to me,
mm-hmm.
and I have no problem talking about what happened to me.
Right.
That's not a problem.
And what does keep you going? Like, you've been through an awful lot, physically and emotionally, so what keeps you going in your life?
I have a 3-year-old.
A 3-year-old?
Who keeps us very busy. Yes, I have a 3-year-old.
Oh, my God. And you have kids.
Very busy.
Yeah, you have kids graduating from college as well?
Yes.
So that's quite a spread in
your kids. It's a spread, David. You know, my better half and I, we always talk about, you know, okay, one more time for a girl. We're going to get our girl. Well, David, I have 5 boys.
Oh, my God. Oh, I can't believe this. You know, I had a friend who had 3 boys, and she really wanted a girl, and so I think they'd given up, and then they got pregnant again, and she had her girl, and she was
wow.
So happy. So, but obviously you've got the male gene in your body, so I guess your wife is just producing boys. So that's really funny. Well,
and you know, like you said, and just really, truly, I tell people all the time, you know, the power of prayer, you know, God is everything in our lives.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm going to stay positive. And that's why I was telling you then, I don't want you to think that just because this happened to me, you know, I'm negative against, you know, doctors or what have you, because I'm not. You know, hopefully what happened to me will help get a better understanding, you know, to where next time they won't give these medications to people based on the incident that may have occurred, you know, like with me from a bite. You know, later
right.
on down the line, we got 250 people saying, well, you never should have been given that medication.
Right.
Well, where were you then? You
right.
know?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess all I can say is that if anybody is stuck with a needle, bitten, or otherwise potentially exposed to somebody who's HIV positive, and if they're told, go on PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis, then at a minimum they should listen to this episode or the podcast we did in 2010, and, you know, do some research on the side effects and evaluate the risks. Like, what risk do you believe you're going to have from HIV, you know, of being infected with HIV? What risk do you believe? And what risk do you see from the drugs? Because what the doctors tell you is really biased by the information they get from the drug companies.
Yeah, and just the same, like you just said, you know, immediately after that, you know, I'm researching and I'm online and I'm reading every article out there, and it just scared me that much more. Sometimes I say maybe the internet can be a scary place to go, you know, because everything that I read said you better keep taking this medicine, you know, regardless of the side effects, you better keep taking this. You know, when I'm reading about AIDS and HIV, you know, I'm just trusting in the medical community. You know, I'm trusting in these doctors.
Yes.
So, you know.
And I think they're sincere. It's not that they don't believe this stuff. It's just that they're getting their information from a biased place. That so much of the information is contaminated by the drug companies. Because if it either comes directly from the drug companies, or it comes from doctors who are sponsored or very close to the drug companies, so they're not getting the unvarnished truth. And they tend to dismiss the experiences of people like yourself who've actually lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And with a small number of people taking this medication, then every individual case should be taken seriously.
Yeah, and when you contacted me, David, I said to myself, if there's anything I could ever do again after this, as long as I have the breath in my body, I'm willing to tell my story to anybody out there.
Well, you've done that today. We're running out of time, so are there any last comments you'd like to make before we wrap up?
You know, and just like I said, I'm not against the medical community. You know, I'm not against the judges, you know, that did their job. I'm okay with that. You know, I'm thankful for people like you that gave me the opportunity to tell my story. You know, I wish I could post every single document that I had from day one to the present, you know, every medical record that I have, so you can just see the true story from March 25th, 1998 to the present. You know, I know that would be a great task, but, you know, I wish I could do that so people could really see the changes that actually took place, you know. But, yeah, I thank you for the opportunity to tell my story, you know. And to those out there that that are really fearful of coming forward, you know, with their story, you know, think about it. It's not always about us. It's not always about, you know, you, the individual. Just think about the other people out there. And, David, that's what I want to do. I want to help anybody I can out there. You know, I'm not against helping people. I want to help people.
Yes. So, I'll include your email address and your phone number in the show notes. And I hope that if people have questions or concerns or just want to phone you and thank you for telling your story, that they'll use those.
And absolutely no problem. Anytime.
Okay. Thanks very much, Edmund. It's great to talk to you again.
All right. Thank you and take care.
Okay. Goodbye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to episode 72 of The Infectious Myth. If you've got a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. You can like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth or follow us on Twitter @infectiousmyth. And don't forget that at Facebook, you can also join the discussion. If you'd like to support this show through a sponsorship or advertising, please contact me. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.